Hello everyone and welcome to another brilliant Sport and Lifestyle Biz here on your Real Feel Good Radio, UK Health Radio. Well, this week we've got an American special for you. We've got two people, both great at what they do, but they also give back to kids. I would like to say, I can't believe it's the last show of May, as next week's show will be the 1st of June and the year is almost half over already. But let's continue on with the great stuff. We've got Sam Thomas, head coach of women's soccer at Principia College. And we've also got Phoebe Schechter, plays American football for Team GB, but was born in America, came over to the UK no less for a career in horses, but found her true passion and her true love, and has also enjoyed a career in coaching with the Buffalo Bills, no less. We've got part one from Phoebe. Throw in our SLB Sports Roundup, and I know you're going to love this one. Well, everyone, back with me again is our favourite coach from America. It's Sam Thomas. Hi, Sam. How are you?
I'm great, John. How are you?
Really good, thank you. We'll get the necessary pleasantries out the way. How was your Christmas?
It was wonderful. It was wonderful. We had a white Christmas here for the first time in St. Louis, where I'm located, for the first time in I don't know how many years. So that was wonderful. Time with the family is always brilliant. How was yours?
Yeah, very good, thank you. You're right. You know, cooking Christmas dinner for the kids is nice, and just spending some time with them, and you know, doing things you don't normally do, like playing, you know, some board games and stuff like that. Just a lovely thing to do, and a great time. But it's all the build up, but it's soon over, isn't it?
It is, and the wind down from Christmas is made softer by Boxing Day. So we're happy to have the Premier League back in our arms after the World Cup.
Yeah, again, it was strange, wasn't it, not having any Premier League football for 6 weeks. But I actually thought, you know, taking all the political and all the outside stuff out of the way, I actually thought it was a pretty good World Cup, to be fair.
The football itself, yeah. You can stick to the football and keep it on the field. It was enjoyable. I find it hard, personally, to detach what happens in the world from what happens on football pitches around the world. But, you know, the football is great. I think we'll find out more about the effects of a mid-year World Cup as we get to the tail end of seasons, and maybe some of those World Cup players might not be on the field at the tail end or needing more rest. But for what it was, congrats to the winners. Proud of how our American boys did.
Yeah.
And happy to see Messi wind up on
it. It was a fairy tale ending. I thought America were excellent considering where they have been, and I thought perhaps a couple of tactical errors from England. Having said that, they went out very narrowly to a team that got through to the final. So it might not have mattered where they met France, if that makes sense, because France might have beaten them anyway. It doesn't matter. So perhaps going out in the quarterfinal to say that's a failure is a bit harsh, because if they hadn't met France, they may have got through further. So it is.
Exactly. I agree. France is a different beast.
Yeah.
And even considering how many injuries they had and players they were without, they were still incredibly deep. So
absolutely
even better for Argentina to beat a France team that was so loaded.
Well, absolutely, and great points. And I'm sure we're going to have another conversation on that. But today is more about you and the project you're building. We've already spoken about this, but briefly, just to sort of, so we can start the conversation off again. You're coaching now as head coach of the women, ladies, girls soccer team at the college that you graduated from yourself. Just quickly tell us your feelings, you know, when you got that opportunity.
It was nothing but joy. You know, Principia College was obviously the college I attended. It was one of the best periods of my life. I look back at it with tons of fond memories. Met my best friends there, you know, and made tons of memories on the football pitch, off the football pitch. And when you enjoy an environment so much and you get the opportunity to coach in that environment, it becomes very easy to know the kind of recruit that is going to share the joy of that environment with you. The difference between being a student on a college campus and being a coach on a college campus is wide. And so sometimes in coaching environments, you can recruit a student athlete for the culture you're creating within your team, but the culture on the college campus in, you know, the dormitories or the houses, the culture in the classrooms, it might be different from the environment that you're creating. And so then your team kind of becomes this bubble of this one environment. At Principia, the environment that I've wanted to create everywhere I've coached, it's baked into the school. It's one of the things I loved about the school as a player. And it means that any player that I recruit here, they're getting the consistency of that environment on the pitch with us and off the pitch in the classroom, in their social life, etc. And so knowing that going into the job, it's a wonderful joy. and it's a wonderful opportunity.
Perfect. And that is quite important briefly, isn't it, to touch on that again before we go on to other things. And this is having learned, trying to place girls with you. It's not solely about getting them into a team. If you're doing your job correctly, or we are for the girls, it's actually finding an environment that's good for them as well.
Precisely. I mean, every coach is going to prioritize different things, and every recruit is going to want different things in an environment, in a coach, in a classroom setting. And so whether it's their area of study or campus size or geographical location, there's 15 million more different things that could play as factors. And every individual is going to be drawn to or pushed away from certain factors. And so when you, as a coach, when you have an environment that you know that you believe in, and a culture that is ticking and rolling and purring, and then you get on the phone with a kid or a parent and you have that kind of conversation and it's effortless and it's seamless and it flows, you know that person is going to fit in your environment. It's a no-brainer. Now, whether or not you have your academic area of interest, whether or not you're too big, too small, whether or not you're close to an international airport or too far away, those are all different factors, but finding that right fit for personality is kind of the first step, because even if we're the right fit for everyone's other boxes, if they're not a right personality and culture fit, they might enjoy their time at the school, but they're not going to enjoy their time on the team.
No.
And we're seeing that now with the advent of the transfer portal, where any student at any college can, if they're unhappy, they can hop on the transfer portal.
Wow.
There's near about 2,000 women soccer players in the transfer portal right now, looking for new homes. And it's emblematic of whether it's false promises or coaching changes or environments not being the right fit.
Yeah.
Pick your reason. There's a lot of reasons that a lot of people are looking to switch. So finding that personality, environment, culture fit off the bat is key.
And this transfer portal, is it open for the whole year? Is it like a transfer window as in normal football? How does it work?
Yeah, so initially, for the last couple of years, it's been fully open for everyone at all times. But there's some new legislation that's just been passed for Division One and Division Two athletes. It does not apply to Division Three.
Okay.
But players have to enter the transfer portal during certain windows.
Right.
They can be recruited from that transfer portal at any time still, but there's a narrow window with which they have to, you know, sign themselves up for it.
Okay.
And basically say, you know, I'm looking to switch. And then once they're in the database, they're in there. Now, the transfer window as it pertains to, you know, if you could draw a parallel between the transfer window in football and the transfer portal for colleges, you basically only transfer in the winter or in the summer because that's between semesters. It doesn't really make sense to transfer in the middle of a semester because you wouldn't be able to pass your classes and get passing grades. So there are kind of, you know, two windows, a winter and a summer window between semesters, then it makes sense for students to transfer. But they can have ongoing conversations during the year.
No, okay, that's great. It's nice to be explained to and how it works. And who knows, there might be a student in America that listens to the show. Do you know what I mean? They're probably all aware anyway, but it's always nice to get the information.
If you're listening, email me, samuel.thomas@principia.edu. It's on our website.
There you go.
Love to be in touch.
Brilliant. Love that. Why not? Why
shameless
not?
Shameless self-promotion.
This is what we're here for. Yeah, when you got that job, I know it's a new project that you've started. Tell me the challenges that you were facing and where the team was when you started.
Yeah, so the first challenge we faced was roster size. I came in mid-spring semester and we only had 9 players.
Right.
Most college roster sizes are between 24 to 32-ish, I would say that's a pretty normal range. And we had 9, and we didn't have any committed incoming players who were basically signed to come in. So that was a little nerve-wracking because I didn't know for certain that we'd be able to field a team in the fall. And so we were able to get 1 freshman and 5 transfers, and then we were able to pick up 2 athletes who were already on campus playing different sports. So we built a roster out to compete this fall. But the second hurdle we faced was we got hit with the injury bug early. We had a player max out on concussions before our season started. A talented player is a winger. She had a high third-degree ankle sprain in our first preseason practice.
Oh,
and so she missed the first 2/3 of the season. And then our goalkeeper, who is an absolute stud. She had an ACL in our third game, and so she missed our remaining 13 games. And, you know, as much as those challenges really throw your season sideways based on how you're hoping it'll go and how you prepare for it to go, I was really impressed with how our team responded. I mean, there's many different ways you can respond, but they chose to put their noses to the grindstone, get to work, lock in, focus, compete. And every game was an uphill battle. That was the nature of how this project was going to be year one. And year two, we're looking forward to next year. We'll have reinforcements. We'll have depth. We'll be healthy. But we invested in the right things this year. And I was really proud of our coaching staff and our players for taking on the challenge that we were faced and making the most of it. So certainly challenges season one, but I think we invested in the right areas. And those are things we're going to be able to take with us season two and beyond.
Brilliant. And sometimes when you have that back against the wall, if you've got the right characters in the team, it's actually a chance then to step up and shine, isn't it?
It is. And we saw a lot of leadership growth this year, which was really, really exciting. You know, we had several captains and they were on average pretty young. And with the challenges they faced, we communicated and worked through it this year. And they learned my leadership style, obviously being a new coach. And I learned theirs, obviously being young and new to leadership. And so we had a conversation at the end of the season about, you know, here were some challenges that went on behind the scenes that we didn't get to talk about during the season that maybe I handled, but they handled. And it was super productive. And it's exciting to move forward with this because there's an elevated level of trust when you go through something like that and you come out the other side stronger without any significant bumps. So I was really proud of how they handled the adversities. And really excited for what that leadership will mean for us next year.
Brilliant. And that obviously just links me into the next question, roll on. And we've already touched on it, really, because you were saying how leaders have emerged, really. But what sort of the characteristics are you looking for? It's not just all about ability, is it?
No, I would say it can be best summed up with one word, which is impact. I'm constantly looking for individuals to have a positive impact on the field.
Yeah.
Have a positive impact in our culture. Have a positive impact in the classroom and how our team does GPA and performance-wise.
Yeah.
Have a positive impact in our community. We are a small school in a tight-knit community, and it's really important to have our team have a positive impact at the school, have our school have a positive impact in our city and in our surrounding area. And I think the people who are character-focused, who are invested and driven, they choose to have impacts in different areas of their life, in whatever area of life they're in. And I think that's not every person needs to be 100%, you know, going overboard in every area of their life. But in the moment that they're in, my hope is that they're prepared and wanting and willing to have an impact at the time. And so on the field, that takes many forms. Maybe it's a player who, you know, they see football pitch like a chessboard and they're thinking four or five steps ahead. Maybe it's a player who can play with every surface of their foot, every texture of the ball, rain or shine, turf or grass. Maybe it's a player who has Mbappe levels of blazing speed, or, you know, has Giroud Benzema levels of sussing out the opportunity to finish. There's many different ways to impact a pitch or team culture, and that impact in whatever form it takes, that's the thing that gets me excited when I see that in film or I get to know that in a recruit, in their personality.
Yeah, fabulous to hear. And you said that the team had, as you said, leaders had emerged, the team had grown. Do you get a lot of cross-sport viewing? So like, would one of the other women's teams or even boys' teams come and watch you play? And does a good result in football mean it's good for one of the other sporting teams?
Oh, absolutely. That's a fantastic question. So because we are a small school, a lot of the athletes know each other, if not all of the athletes know each other. It is a small environment and they all support each other. So our team is always present at basketball games, at volleyball games, men's or women's. They're present at baseball, present at softball or men's soccer. And same thing is happening for us. Rising tide lifts all ships. And so for us, the more successful our program is, you know, it increases the platform that other programs have to be successful. Right now, our rugby team just won the national championship.
Oh,
they just
amazing.
Won the Division II national championship. And that is brilliant. It's brilliant for us on the women's football side because it increases our visibility, lifts our platform.
Yeah.
And our men's basketball program, our women's basketball program, they are winning left, right, and center. Our men's team just went to Hawaii and they won some classic invitational in Hawaii. And now all of a sudden there's recruits in Hawaii who have heard of Principia College.
Brilliant.
And so there's immense value to that cross-sport pollination and increasing visibility.
Brilliant. And you've even sort of elaborated on that more and expanded that to the fact that when you go on national tournaments, it actually brings awareness to the college, which would, as you said, open up the eyes to more people around the country.
There is so much data. Are you familiar with March Madness? The NCAA men's basketball tournament every spring.
I've heard of it. I wouldn't say I know too much about it, but okay. I have heard of it.
So viewing numbers on March Madness are comparable to the Super Bowl. Now, it's a whole tournament. It's not just a game, but it is the Division I men's basketball tournament. And the viewing numbers are staggering. I believe there's more viewers than there is for the college football championship. And because it's a tournament, you start with a bracket style, 64 teams, they play each other.
Yeah.
You know, you'll have a 13, 14, 15 seed, maybe upset a 2, 3, 4, or 5 seed.
Right.
And every year, whichever school gets one of those upsets, they get a visibility platform seen by tens of millions. Their enrollment and applications go through the roof. And so very recently, there was a college, UMBC, University of Maryland, Baltimore County.
Right.
They were a Cinderella story, and they won a couple games. And I don't want to get the figures wrong, but you can look it up. Their applications that year jumped a couple 100%.
Wow.
And it's just because their basketball team won 2 games. But the stage in which they won those games brought that platform to the school. So
brilliant.
Certainly something in all coaches' minds when good things happen at the school. From a recruiting standpoint, it's good to strike while that iron's hot.
Absolutely fabulous, brilliant stuff. Thank you, Sam. And a couple of things actually before we wrap up. I know your schedule's quite tight. What's the 2023 program or the rest of this season looking like? And obviously I know you said the team have done well and have grown. Obviously you're looking for more recruits in the summer, and that's only going to help out with the squad.
Yeah, so we're looking for recruits right now. I'm on the recruiting trail watching games, having phone calls, managing visits on campus. We've got some brilliant footballers, both personalities and talent-wise, that we're talking with that have come on visits that are interested in our school. It's a super exciting time. The big challenge is going to be deciding within that group who's the best fit and who we go with. So definitely a blessing in that setting. And that's ongoing through winter and spring. Hopefully by the time summer rolls around, we are set. Summer is pretty late to be picking up recruits for the upcoming fall. A lot of schools have application deadlines in maybe March, April, or May. So ours is May. And so we try and get all of our recruiting done before then. For our team, they'll get together, they'll lift, they'll condition, they'll do their winter workouts, and they'll play futsal. We've got a great indoor training facility. We've got a full 200-meter indoor track and a couple futsal courts that sit inside of it. And so they'll play futsal. Sometimes they'll play pickup with the men's team, and that's going to, you know, constantly challenge them and elevate their play. We brought 2 transfers in for the spring semester, a midfielder and a goalkeeper, to 2 positions that, whether we have an injury or a player graduating, that we needed reinforcements. So that'll be great for us for our spring games. And then we'll get together. We'll have our training sessions. We'll play some competition, and we'll keep focusing on putting down all the groundwork so that when the reinforcements come in full force in the fall, we're ready and we're ticking so that everyone can kind of step in and pick up where we left off.
Brilliant. And the first year, has it gone as well as you'd expected considering your injuries? Are you happy with how it's been?
Yeah, kind of a mixed bag with both. I think our on-field was worse than we expected, in so much as, you know, those injuries really deal you a blow. If you've got a small roster and you lose a goalkeeper and a goal scorer, it's damaging. But I will say, on the flip side, the team culture and environment is much better than expected. In times of transition, often those kinds of things can present challenges, and it was more an opportunity than a challenge this year, and so we're coming out of this period feeling that very much as a strength. And so full of optimism from that standpoint. And then off the field, you know, obviously anytime you take a new job, it means that you're picking up and moving. And so from a personal standpoint, way better than expected. I got the opportunity to move to an environment that I'm familiar with, closer to family, closer to friends. And so from a personal life standpoint, nothing but green lights here. It's been a little bit of up and down, but certainly more positive than negative, and even more positive on the horizon.
Brilliant, Sam. Just quickly before we do let you go, how are those injured players? How are they coming along? Are they recovering well?
Yeah, they're coming along. So our winger, she was able to finish the season strong. So she's doing some specific ankle strengthening this offseason to make sure. It's her second ankle injury in 2 years. So we really want to make sure she has a fully healthy season this year.
Yeah.
We've got a couple other players with some knocks they finished the season with. So lots of working through that this offseason. You know, the player who unfortunately had her concussions, this would have been her final season. So she's forced to hang up her boots, unfortunately.
Right.
But she's still a brilliant person, brilliant personality and leader, and we were grateful for the time we got with her. And then for our goalkeeper, she is crushing her ACL rehab. Just before she went home for the holiday break, I drive her to her rehab once a week, and she gets taken it by other people on campus or other days. But I talked to the rehab specialist, the PT that she's working with, and he said she's ahead of course, crushing it, super strong. So that's all the good stuff we love to hear. She's that kind of personality who's going to look down that challenge and say, come and get me. So we're thrilled for her, and it's looking like she'll be back in time for our games next season. So
brilliant.
We'll have our depth back at the goalkeeping position with some players coming in and her coming back. So we will look strong, but super happy for her to be crushing that rehab, and we'll see her moving around this spring.
Absolutely brilliant, Sam. Thank you very much again for your time. As I said, I know your schedule's quite tight today, so appreciate you always doing this. We'll catch up next month, and you can let us know how things are going since you've been back. Glad you had a fantastic Christmas. Hope you have an amazing new year.
Thank you, sir. It's always wonderful to catch up. Always grateful to hear everything going on in your neck of the woods. This is a relationship that fills me with a lot of joy and gratitude, so it's always wonderful to get a chance to talk on the horn and get our conversations on record, but I love all of our opportunities we get to talk off record as well. Thanks for the time.
No, absolutely. It's totally my pleasure. It's so interesting, and I'm just very grateful. So, everybody, that's Sam Thomas, Principia College. Thanks, Sam.
Thanks, John. Take care.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Well, hello everyone. This week with me, I've got a very special lady. She's done a lot of facets in the sport she's chosen. She's a former NFL player, is a former coach and still coaches, and she's now a TV pundit. It's Phoebe Schechter. Hi Phoebe, how are you?
Hello, I'm very well, thank you. Thanks so much for having me on to chat with you today.
Oh, no problem. It's absolute pleasure. And I'm sure by the end of it, we'll all know it's a privilege. Thank you very, very much for that. Just want to obviously go through that you playing and coaching and now being on the television, which is a fantastic opportunity. But just if we go back to the start, really, Phoebe, just so people get to know you a bit better. You were obviously growing up in America. Were you brought up around American football, which gave you any hint that as an adult, this would be a major part in your life?
Not at all. My entire life has been dedicated to horses, and really, you know, I adopted my pony when I was 13 and she was only 4 months old. And for me, that's what I saw as my career path, is running and managing yards, wherever that was. It wasn't really until I moved to the UK over 10 years ago that I got involved in playing American football. And that was really because I was looking for a bit of American culture. And again, horses is pretty much 7 days a week. So I was looking for something that's a bit of a break. So a bit of a social scene outside of the horsey world. And I just think when you're out of your comfort zone, you're so much more willing to take risks. And I was 22 years old, living in a foreign country, essentially. So it all kind of was a big sign that there was a team about 20 minutes from me.
Wow. Amazing. As you said, you know, you were into horses, equestrian. What was your upbringing around them when you were younger?
So my mom is British, and that's how I have dual citizenship. So living in the States, that was something that she encouraged from me from a young age. And I think it's actually taught me and been a lot of the life lessons that I now carry to this day. You know, that whole, you fall off, you get back on, and
right,
responsibility. There's so many of those little things throughout my life, you know, from a young age, being responsible for something else and dedication and hard work, that plays a big role in what I do and who I am now. So yeah, none of my family are sporty at all. So I think they still are not sure exactly what I'm doing.
That's a great point you make, actually, the fact that it does provide great opportunity because, you know, most people, if they want to test their kids for, you know, responsibility, buy them a goldfish or a hamster. Whereas a horse is like proper work, isn't it? You know, it's morning, afternoon, evening, and yeah, a lot of mucking out, as they call it.
Precisely, precisely. And I think it's probably the greatest thing that could have happened to me. It gave me so much focus as well. You know, all I could do was think about going to go see my horse and, you know, dedicating myself to something that's greater than myself. That's really key because I pretty much volunteered with horses. I went to a horse rescue starting at like age 10 and all the way up. So, you know, going there to care of 40 plus horses at a young age, you know, that's what you live. Find something that you're passionate about. And I think it kind of keeps you on the straight and narrow as well.
Absolutely. I know quite a few people in horses. One of my good friends is Holly Doyle, who's one of the best female jockeys on the planet, I think. And, you know, her dedication is amazing. So I know what it is like to look after a horse. That was obviously your main upbringing in life. You came to the UK, as you said, to pursue a career in equestrian. Obviously, there's great facilities over here for horses. Horses were obviously your first love. Was horses something, as you said, you've indicated you were sort of brought up in? And was it also because the opportunities for women in actual team sports wasn't as good at that time? Or was it always horses when you were growing up?
I think for me, it was always horses. You know, I put my heart and soul into whatever it was I was doing, and it was horses for me. I did play team sports growing up, and you know, I was lucky that the schools I went to allowed me to play on the boys' team. So I played basketball on the boys' team. I played softball, cross country, lacrosse. Wow. So I played a bunch of different sports. And I think because of how I grew up, I never really cared about gender. So by that, I mean, I felt like I was just the same as everyone else. I felt like I was the same as the boys. And if anything, I was probably a bit too competitive and, you know, wanted to beat the boys at everything that I did, you know, that kind of attitude towards things. So I think as I grew up, because I always felt like I could do anything, you know, no matter the fact that I was a girl, that never even fazed me, to be honest. Yeah. And I feel like because I felt that way, that now later in life, I'm like, yeah, so what? I might be the only girl in the room. Who cares? This has been my life since I was a young kid.
Yeah, I mean, what a great attitude to have. And that's one of the things we're trying to instill into the girls at football. So what if you're a girl? It doesn't mean you're any worse a player. So yeah, that's a brilliant attitude to have, something that every girl should really look up to if they're struggling for that confidence. So yeah, amazing, Phoebe, absolutely brilliant. And then after just a month in the UK, you saw a social media advert for tryouts at American football. What was it that made you go for that decision? Was it just the bit of culture that you said, or did you actually love the sport?
No, I did not love the sport, but I just thought, what a sign, right? I mean, literally, like you're saying, a month after moving here, there's trials in Manchester, 20 minutes from where I'm living.
Wow.
I mean, it couldn't have been the stars aligning anymore. You know, I still remember like sitting on my laptop and seeing that and thinking, oh my gosh, like I've got to do this. I'm going to go for this. Whilst having no clue about the sport itself or how it operates. And that's why I think it was something I've carried with me for so long now. Any of these opportunities, just go for it. You know, what's the worst that could happen? So what if you're not successful in it? You know, you probably learned from the experience. But if you don't give yourself the chance and you don't take that chance,
yes,
you never know what could happen on the other side.
No. Again, brilliant, brilliant thing for any girl to listen to and take on board. You're a shining example, you know, just on how to achieve, just to go for things, really, you know, believe in yourself and go for things. So obviously it went well. I'd like you to talk about your career now, but things it included. You obviously played a sport at a good level. You played at national level for the British women's American football team, including a medal, a silver medal in the 2022 World Championship. So how amazing was that, the championships? But tell us a little bit about how your career unfolded to actually get you to that national level.
Yeah, so I think part of it is timing, right? Timing is everything. And when I started playing in this country 10 years ago, that's really when the sport for women was starting.
Right.
So I got in there right at the beginning, right in the infancy of the sport. And the national program was literally starting that same year that I got involved in it. So finding my position on the team and, you know, growing the game from going from 5-a-side up to the 11-a-side version that we play now, which is what everyone plays.
Yeah.
It's just been an incredible journey to be a part of. And I mean, it's fulfilled everything that I was looking for in terms of the social aspects, the kind of family aspects you get from sports, the competition and everything like that. So, you know, for us, I've been at every championship that we've had as a national program. I play tackle and I play the non-contact version, which is flag. And, you know, the sport is still growing. So like last year when we went to the World Championships in Finland and came second. I mean, that was a huge achievement for us. No one had ever, apart from Canada, ever played the USA or made it to a final and played USA in a final. So that was massive. And we were tied 14-14 at halftime with USA. And, you know, they took off in the second half. But for us, it just shows the potential because domestically, we're just moving up this year to 9-a-side football. But historically, we've been playing 7-a-side. So the pitch is much smaller. You know, the dynamics of the game are different. So we're building up to playing 11-a-side, which is key. And then this upcoming summer, well, actually, even before that, we've got European qualifiers in the country. So in April, we play Sweden and Worcester, which will be very cool for us as a tackle team. And then we've got the European Championships in Ireland with flag football. So lots going on.
Lots going on. And you seem to be doing so well at everything. So it must be a very exciting time for you.
It is. And I think I've been fortunate to have really great people around me and I have a great team. And I think, you know, part of it has also been a lot of sacrifice over the years, you know, so a lot of hard work and a lot of dedication to this sport and a long time of not making any money. So it's nice. And even us as a sport, right, for us as women playing this sport, well, for anybody playing American football in the UK, you have to pay to play. So, you know, everything costs money. And I think to finally be in a spot where I'm like, at least I can afford to pay to play for my country is exciting.
Yeah, I mean, amazing. And you're right, the same with football, soccer. You do have to pay to play at certain levels. And it is expensive, especially with families who've got more than one sibling. No, absolutely amazing, Phoebe. And the fact is, you're not only satisfied with playing, you also want to give back, which is another amazing trait to have. You started coaching in Manchester, which it was fantastic. You picked that up early. But then you made the switch back to America and went for a college experience. How was that? And is that what really developed your love for coaching or just did it enhance it?
Yeah, I mean, for me, going to the US and coaching out there, again, just went out there, lived on my head coach's, in the basement of my head coach's house, and, you know, would run to work. You don't make any money, and that's all part of it, right? Like, what are those survival stories that you build? But I think putting yourself to be around great humans that you can learn from, I think that's really what struck my love for it. There are no opportunities in the UK where you can be a full-time American football coach. So to be able to go out there and do that was really exciting. And it absolutely sparked my love for it. And I just thought, this is the world I want to live in. This is what I want to do. I want to help people. And I want to be surrounded by this elite mindset for as long as possible.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We finish off this week's show with our SLB Sports Roundup featuring golf, horse racing, darts, tennis, motorsport, NBA and football. We start with golf, the PGA and DP World Tours. This week combined for the US PGA Championship, the second major of the season from Oak Hill East Course in Rochester, New York. It was a great tournament. Funnily enough, the start was actually delayed due to frost. However, once they got away, they had cold conditions, wet conditions, and finished off with a glorious Sunday. And it was won by Brooks Koepka. Now not part of the PGA Tour, he's on the LIV Tour, but always a world-class golfer and a man that is so calm under pressure. He nearly made it at the Masters earlier in the year, but faded away in the final round. Learned from the mistakes, come back to win his third PGA and his fifth major, joining just a list of 20 golfers. Well done to Brooks. He won on -9, 2 shots clear of Scottie Scheffler, the American number one on the PGA Tour. And for us, the guy who will be European number one in years to come, Victor Hovland, who seems to save his best for the big days and the big competitions. Still young, still improving, and will be a major winner shortly, we're sure. This week on the PGA, it's the Charles Schwab Challenge from the Colonial Golf Club, Fort Worth in Texas. And on the DP World Tour, it's the Dutch Open from the Bernardus Golf Club in the Netherlands. The LPGA Tour are back on the 1st to the 4th of June with a Mizuho Americas Open from the Liberty National Golf Course in New Jersey. Horse racing saw some big races last week. The Group 1 for the Marlins, the Lockinge at Newbury. Well, we've been talking about modern games for a long time. He didn't disappoint and won very well, despite the second place horse chinned it. Now nicknamed Luis Suarez, taking a bite out of the winner's jockey's hand, William Buick. However, he'll now be going on to the Queen Anne at Royal Ascot and be very difficult to beat. It was the trials for the big classics this year at York, and in the Dante it was won by the Foxes, who'd come second first time out, had race course experience as well. He's now going for the Derby. However, we like from the race Passenger, who'd only ever run once, was a bit green and a bit naive, but ran on despite not a clear run. But we don't think he'll go near our fancy for the Derby, which is Military Order from the Charlie Appleby Yard, ridden by William Buick. The Musidora threw another filly into the Oaks reckoning with Soul Sister, John and Thady Gotham, ridden by Frankie Dettori. She's now second favourite by impressive Chester Oaks winner Save the Last Dance. So as we said, up-and-coming race is the Derby. Military Order we like. Have to look out for a rest on Frankie's last-ever Derby ride, Passenger as well. And don't forget the winter favourite, Augusta Rodin, who disappointed so badly in the Guineas. The Oaks, we've mentioned the two, Save the Last Dance and Soul Sister. Running Line might have an each-way chance if she takes it. The Coronation Cup. We like Emily Upjohn and Hurricane Lane. That's the one for us. However, it's a good race with Pont Lonsdale and Westover to come. That's the first weekend in June. Something for everybody to look forward to. Darts and the Premier League. Week 16 from Aberdeen was the final round of the Round Robin series. And we've now got our final four. Well, at Aberdeen, Dimitri Vandenberg got his first win in bizarre circumstances. He beat Gerwin Price 6-5 in the final to claim 5 points. Gerwin Price 3 points. However, Gerwin Price already knew he'd top the group. Denis also beat Michael van Gerwen in the semi, who pulled out with a shoulder injury. So it was a little bit of a strange night. And the other beaten semi-finalist was Nathan Aspinall, who then just missed out of the top four due to getting beaten by Gerwin Price in that semi-final. So this week from the O2, it's the playoff semi-finals and final. Gerwin Price tops the group on 39 points. Michael Smith is second on 33, but gets that due to 4 nightly wins. Michael van Gerwen also has 33 in third. He has 3 nightly wins. And Johnny Clayton survives by the skin of his teeth, having had his points tally equaled by Nathan Aspinall, but goes through by virtue of 2 nightly wins. So semi-final 1 is Gerwin Price versus Johnny Clayton. Semi-final 2 is Michael Smith versus Michael van Gerwen. And the winners progress to the final to become the Premier League darts champion. This week sees the start of the French Open, the second major in tennis. The women's Iga Swiatek looks a class above everyone, apart from when she goes into the majors. That narrows the gap. We like our good old favourite Anya Sabalenka and also Elena Rybakina. They're both good. Look out for Swiatek and them two. And then an outsider who always plays well, Yelena Ostapenko. In the men's, you would say Novak. He's not in quite the great form. You would say Rafa in France. He's now declared himself unfit for the rest of the season and declared that 2024 will be his last year, which is a huge shame. Another great going out. Carlos Alcaraz is the man in form and a couple to look out that might cause surprises are Holger Rune and Yannick Sinner. Motorsport, we start on two wheels and MotoGP. They're back on the 11th of June with the Italian Grand Prix from Mugello. World Superbikes are back on the 2nd of June for the Emilia Romagna round from Imola, and British Superbikes held round 3 this weekend with races 7, 8 and 9 from Donington using the Grand Prix circuit. The sprint race was won by a back-to-form Kyle Ride for OMG Racing Yamaha. Tommy Bridewell for the Beer Monster Ducati was second. Leon Haslam for the Rokit BMW Motorrad was third. Race 1 was won by Jason O'Halloran after a series of crashes. All the fancied riders, but he stayed on board and won on his McCams Yamaha. Ryan Vickers was second on the OMG Racing Yamaha. Josh Brooks was third on the FHO Racing BMW Motorrad. Race 2 was won again by Kyle Ride, who was out in front when he fell off in race 1. Tommy Bridewell was second, and a new man for the podium this week, but not in total, Glenn Irwin, also riding the Beer Monster Ducati. This leaves the standings after 3 rounds. Tommy Bridewell, Beer Monster Ducati, out in front on 119. Glenn Irwin, his teammate, second, 3 points behind on 116. Josh Brooks, FHO Racing BMW Motorrad, third on 114. They're back in early June with round 4 and races 10, 11 and 12 from Knockhill using the full circuit. Speedway, they're back on the 3rd of June with round 3 and the Prague Czech Grand Prix. On to four wheels and NASCAR. It was the All-Star Open from North Wilkesboro Raceway. It was won by Kyle Larson in his Chevy Camaro for Hendrick Motorsport. Second was Bubba Wallace driving the Toyota Camry for 23XI Racing. And third was his teammate, Tyler Reddick. This leaves the standings with Ross Chastain out in front for Chevy Camaro Trackhouse Racing. Christopher Bell is second, driving the Toyota Camry for Joe Gibbs Racing. And third, Kevin Harvick driving the Ford Mustang for Stuart Haas. IndyCar, and it was the qualifying weekend for next week's big event of the season, the Indy 500 from the Brickyard, the famous oval circuit which all IndyCar drivers love to win and go to victory lane to drink the pint of milk. Our rookie of the season from 2 years ago, Alex Palou, driving for Chip Ganassi, created the fastest time in IndyCar history with an average speed over 4 laps of 234.217 miles per hour. He is in pole position, closely chased by Rinus Piquet, driving Ed Carpenter Racing, and Felix Rosenquist, who likes the track. He was third for Arrows McLaren. Special now for our other driver, Pato O'Ward. He also drives for Arrows McLaren. He's on the second row of the grid in fifth place, and he is a flyer. Formula E is back on the 3rd to the 4th of June with the Indonesian E-Prix from Jakarta. They have 2 races, and Formula 1 was cancelled this weekend due to flooding in the Italian area. Can you believe it? But it was for the safety of everyone. They're cancelling the Grand Prix for the season and moving straight on to the Principality this weekend for Monaco. The Grand Prix, the jewel in the crown, the one that everybody wants to win, the Monaco Grand Prix. NBA, and we've got some one-way conference finals. In the West, Denver Nuggets, the number one seed, are beating the Los Angeles Lakers. 3-0. The fourth game is at LA Lakers. They have to win that to stay in, or they are out and Denver Nuggets are the Western Conference champions. I think the Lakers spent all their energy beating the Warriors, and the Nuggets are the best team in the league. The league season proved it. The Miami Heat, who were unseeded, they came through the play-ins right at the start. They're beating the number one seed from the East, the Boston Celtics, 3-0. They've got a home match next to make it a 4-0 sweep. I expect it will be Denver Nuggets versus Miami Heat in the final, but you never know in sport. We finish off with football. Premier League, match day 37. Tottenham 1, Brighton 3. Liverpool 1, Aston Villa 1. Wolves 1, Everton 1. Bournemouth 0, Manchester United 1. Fulham 2, Crystal Palace 2. Nottingham Forest 1, Arsenal 0. That meant that Arsenal couldn't win the league and Manchester City were champions. And Nottingham Forest wouldn't be relegated. West Ham 3, Leeds 1. Brighton 3, Southampton 1. Manchester City 1, Chelsea 0. And a result to bring you Newcastle versus Aston Villa. Well, Manchester City are now champions, played 36 with 88 points. Arsenal were second, played 37 with 81 points. Newcastle and Manchester United joint third, played 36, 69 points. Newcastle with a much better goal difference, but both teams just need 1 point from 2 games to guarantee Champions League football. Some catch-up fixtures for you. Brighton versus Manchester City and Manchester United versus Chelsea. The last weekend of the Premier League season is also upon us. Aston Villa versus Brighton, Everton versus Bournemouth, Leeds versus Tottenham, Brentford versus Manchester City, Manchester United versus Fulham, Chelsea versus Newcastle, Leicester versus West Ham, Arsenal versus Wolves, Southampton versus Liverpool. So it looks like that Leeds may go down, but we'll know more next week. As we said, Manchester City are champions. Congratulations to them. In the WSL, we're also nearing the final week of the season. Some catch-up results. Everton 1, Arsenal 4. West Ham 0, Chelsea 4. And match day 21, last weekend, Tottenham 4, Reading 1, Chelsea 2, Arsenal 0, Everton 2, Brighton 1, Aston Villa 3, Liverpool 3, Leicester 1, West Ham 2, and Manchester United 2, Manchester City 1, with a last minute winner from the brilliant Lucia Garcia. The league table with one game left, Chelsea lead the way, played 21, 55 points. Manchester United 2nd, played 21, 53 points. Arsenal 3rd, played 21, 47 points. And the final week fixtures: West Ham versus Tottenham, Reading versus Chelsea, Manchester City versus Everton, Liverpool versus Manchester United, Brighton versus Leicester, and Arsenal versus Aston Villa. Well, if Chelsea win at Reading, the league is over. If they lose, Manchester United can win the league with a win at Liverpool, and it looks like Arsenal are safe in third following Manchester United's defeat of Manchester City. That's our SLB Sports Roundup. Well, everyone, thank you for tuning in to another great show. We really appreciate it so much. Thank you to our guest. Absolutely brilliant. We are so grateful for the time you give us, for your amazing content. Thank you again to you, the listeners. And thank you to Johan, Raffaella, and the whole team at UK Health Radio for the amazing platform they continue to give us. We'll see you all next week.